Okay, so without further ado, let's get the show started. I'm here with Monitor Pete in studio. Let me turn your mic on so that we can hear you. And he's here to tell us about what's going on in the world of mobile food vending in New Orleans and what legislation has just been passed and what needs to be done. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mr. Gahijan. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So tell us, what's going on? What's the ordinance that just got passed in regards to mobile food vending?
There was an ordinance that was just passed for mobile food vending that took away the 20 carts that was allowed for the first time in 20 years in a central business district passed during the Mark Morial administration. And fast forward 20 years later to the Mitchell Andrew administration presently, they do not allow push carts within the CBD. The one that was passed allows only food trucks in there, but makes and allows trailers to also be in there. But the trailers can only sell snowballs. The food trucks can sell whatever they want. Push carts can't be within there. There was never any independent operators other than Nancy Dukes 20 years ago, and she was kicked out after being there 2 years. To be in the French Quarters as a push cart. And one of the two push carts that's presently in there is operating illegally. And I'm speaking of the ice cream vendor who dissolved his corporation about two years ago. He dissolved the grandfather clause that he was protected under. But the Department of Revenue and the city turns a blind eye, especially the 8th District, to their illegal operation and continue to issue him licenses. While vendors like myself can't operate a hot dog cart or any type of push cart within the central business district or within the French Quarter especially. And having said that, let me just clarify a little bit. At Rampart, on the lakeside of Rampart, you could put a drink cart there, but there's just not enough traffic to support a push cart in that area. And most of the tourists stay back toward Bourbon Street. I've approached several council people, and the only thing I've gotten from them is that I'm in the pipeline and I'm still waiting. And that, to me, is sort of like, you know, the checks in the mail. Mm-hmm. I think what needs to happen is there needs to be some three things need to happen: an amendment to the present ordinance that will allow push carts to for individuals and not necessarily corporations, but to allow individuals to be able to operate in the French Quarter and in Central Business District. Two, I'm asking for anyone that has any legal skills or knowledge to help me in maybe preparing a lawsuit. Two forms of protectionism that the city is practicing right now. That is an unfair trade practice and violation of the Commerce Clause by only allowing one push cart hot dog foot. By allowing one push cart food vendor to be in the CBD and one ice cream and drink company to be there, even though the second is operating illegally. What do you have with the ordinance? One of the ordinances that I was cited for actually don't have an enforcement element. It simply says you need a permit to operate, and it ends there. They borrow enforcement elements from other ordinances, which presently I'm fighting in court right now.
I have a question about, you said the Commerce Clause. What's the Commerce Clause that it's going against?
The Commerce Clause is sort of almost like, and I'm a layperson, I'm not a lawyer. It disallows municipalities disenfranchise one business over another, and it disallows the municipalities to protect one business over another. For instance, if I would remember a New York case where New York had stopped certain companies from bringing in milk, I think it was New Jersey, unless they paid all these different taxes and all these other regulations that wasn't visited upon New York State milk producers. So the Commerce Clause disallows that for you to interfere with trade coming from other states or other municipalities. And what the city is basically doing is protecting Lucky Dogs, and they're also protecting what it used to be French Market Ice, now it's Oliver Roberts, and they're protecting him. They will not issue citations to Oliver Roberts Ice. They will not issue citations to Lucky Dogs in terms of their sinks not working properly, other than when they've been given notice that an inspection is coming by the health department. So that's kind of my understanding of the Commerce Clause. An unfair trade practice is, to me, almost the same thing, where you're allowing one company to be able to sell their goods and wares, but disallow others that want to do the same thing or similar.
And just so that we know exactly what we're talking about, can you tell us the difference between push carts, food trucks, and trailers?
I'm glad you asked. The trucks are allowed to buy a franchise to be able to operate right on Canal Street and other places in the CBD, in certain portions of the CBD. The food trucks are just vehicles like step vans. The trailers are anything attached to a vehicle that you can stand inside, but they're only allowed to sell snowballs within the CBD. Once they get outside the Central Business District or the French Quarters, they can sell whatever they want. The push carts is usually something that will either be on a bicycle, a small cart that you would tow the, behind your vehicle that's not enclosed, or something that you can push basically from one location to another. And all three of those sort of fall in the category of a push cart. They're not allowed to be in the French Quarter at all. They're not allowed to be in the Central Business District other than the lakeside of Rampart and many other parts of the city that's that they've sectioned off as franchise locations. That means you would have to buy a franchise.
What's the process of buying a franchise, and how much does that cost? And who would you, what franchise would you then become part of? Or is this just general?
To be honest with you, I haven't really looked into franchise because the fees that's involved is over $9,000. And it's something that's out of my budget. And I knew I couldn't afford it. So I apologize. I will find, I don't have the answer for that today, but I will find out the answer and I'll get back with you and your audience.
Perfect. What's the rationale for only allowing snowballs on trailers?
I have no idea for that. I have my own conclusions, but I have no idea. Originally, Ms. Head did not want to include trailers and push carts. I remember going to a couple of meetings and her position was she just didn't want to include it right now.
She didn't say anymore, I just don't want to include it right now.
Right. She said, basically, she said, you know, we're trying to ease on in there and we don't want to create any waves because it'll be a big fight with Lucky Dogs and the Restaurant Association. And, you know, I didn't get that portion of it. It just didn't click with me because they didn't have a solid ground to stand on for the most part, other than screaming overcrowding. That just wasn't a real issue because when you tested for a validity, it just wouldn't hold up in my humble opinion.
Yeah. So what's your stake in this fight?
I just want to get out there and sell some hot dogs, basically, make a living. It's not a very, very prestigious living. It's not a high-powered position where you have an army of people. But it puts food on my table. It keeps me from going on food stamps and depending on the government to take care of my needs when I'm perfectly healthy, to be able to take care of that without all the obstructions. To be able to live part of the American dream, which I'm entitled to as a former veteran. Hot dogs is, I like it. You meet a lot of different people, very interesting people. I enjoy it. It's amazing the tourists you get coming through there. But I think it's an opportunity where you can take someone that is either previously incarcerated or a single parent that's making $13,000 and put them in a situation where they're now making $20,000. Able to take care of those three or four kids and not have to depend on the government and different social services to pay the bills or what have you, but actually give back. I think what they can, in addition, do is one hot dog cart could create three different jobs. One person may work in the morning. A homeless person can be taken out of the shelter with that one mom-and-pop operation. If it's a single parent, that parent may want to just, hey, hire this guy from the homeless to help her clean up the cart, or to work the night shift or work special events. Nonprofits is great for nonprofits because what it allows them to do, struggling nonprofits don't have to constantly put in grants. They may miss a grant. That nonprofit may be doing a lot of good work in the community, but because of the political climate, the different municipalities may not want to contribute to that nonprofit at that particular time. So it gives them, it diversifies their income stream for those nonprofits. And there's some nonprofits who just don't want government funding. and they want to be self-supportive and self-sustaining. I think this is a great avenue with these little bitty hot dog carts that they can do that with minimum cost.
Yeah. So when was the ordinance that passed? When did it pass?
It had passed. It went into effect January 2nd.
Okay.
And it passed, I think, maybe a couple of weeks before then, around January. I'm not sure. I know it went into effect January 1st because all licenses expired on the 31st of December.
Okay. Do you usually when there's an ordinance that just passes, they put any further progress or they put it on the shelf? They said, okay, we've dealt with it. So how likely do you think it is that this will be revisited? Because this would be a revisit in a way of.
Well, I was promised this, you know. Again, a lot of times politicians are, you know, make promises in the dark and come sun up, they tend to change. 20 years ago, I was promised that, you know, by the head of city council then, that they would come back and revisit it. Well, 20 years later, that council is gone. They came back to revisit it, but only stripped more rights away. I've constantly called, emailed the city council, and they were unwilling to actually meet with me. Only one or two council persons met with me. And that's someone, if I'm not mistaken, from Mr. Gray's office, but I never got the appointment with Mr. Gray. No, correction. He did give me an appointment. I missed that first one. After that, I couldn't get another one with him. So that's my bad. Someone from, I never met with Councilwoman Ramsey or any other council persons. However, Councilwoman Ramsey, one time, I did meet with her people. The most at that time that he was able to help with, he was supposed to get back with me and help me at the time the lights was off. But he didn't get back with me. I went to a couple of meetings, family, the community meetings, and tried to speak with her. And still to this day had not got an appointment. And her aide told me that I was in the pipeline to get an appointment with her. And there was another meeting by Justice and Beyond that they were invited to. And no one from the mayor's office showed up. Council at large Williams' office showed up, our head, Ms. Stacey Head, nor Councilwoman Ramsey.
Mm. For people that don't know, can you say what Justice and Beyond is?
Justice and Beyond is a community organization that takes on a lot of community issues. They do a number of things. They were instrumental in assisting with Judge Chief Justice Johnson. Mm-hmm. Getting her rightful position. Right now, they're involved in Judge Yolanda King being prosecuted under something that has never been done before, and is, to say the least, is just unusual. You know, I don't. That answer, I can't really say. I know they do a lot of good community work, and it's a very diverse group. And I'm very surprised. I've just started going to the meetings in the last month or two. But it's a very, very diverse group of political leaders, community activists, and just normal people that go in and get to listen to what's really going on behind the scenes versus the little tidbits that you may catch on the news or may not even catch on the news, that's such as fracking, people wrongfully incarcerated just sitting in jail.
Wait, fracking? You can't just bring up fracking.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And not – no. fracking. So they're dealing with fracking too.
There was a group that came there and spoke on fracking, and there was a large discussion about it. And I wasn't nearly as familiar with it as when I went to that meeting, and I wasn't aware of how much damage that it could possibly cause in the environment and to the environment.
Right. Wait. I don't want to get lost in fracking.
Okay.
I just want to, because you brought that up in you know, relation to a Justice and Beyond meeting, so that makes me think they're going to start fracking somewhere around us.
Okay.
now I got to reach out to Justice and Beyond and see what's going on over there. So back to food trucks and mobile food vendors. So where currently can the trucks, trailers, and carts operate?
There's a map. There that they have. The white zone is totally off limits on the map. The yellow zone, you can pretty much be with a regular license. The blue zone, you would have to franchise. And this blue zone extends in large parts of the New Orleans East, uptown here in the Carrollton area, and especially downtown in New Orleans. And they're called clean zones. And it's just, to me, it's just the craziest thing because the big boys, such as the Audubon Society, these other big organizations that's there to make money and speak about culture, they can block off these streets at any given time and charge huge amounts of money, enormous amounts of money for a local vendor like myself who can't afford to pay. They would charge me maybe $12,000 to be able to operate, or $5,000 to operate at one of these events, and they would leave making a fistful of money. But I could not get a license to work there. And again, we get back to the protectionism. And
$5,000 for one event?
Right. If I'm not mistaken, that is the French Quarter Fest or the Oyster Fest, to have a little booth, depending on the size of the booth. And you would only see the big boys there, such as Rouse's, your Dragos. You may see your Dini's there. People who can really afford, who make millions of dollars, who can afford this. Mm-hmm. A little vendor like myself can't make it. A little vendor like myself can't afford to put $500,000 or more into my council person's campaign contributions. You know, at the most, I may be able to put maybe $100 on a good year.
Which we shouldn't have to do in order to get, you know, services in our city and to have opportunities available and accessible to the majority of folks, right? Because this is very much creating a barrier for normal, you know, startups, people that aren't doing as well but want to take on that kind of entrepreneurial spirit and do something for themselves. These franchising fees and that kind of stuff puts a huge barrier. Is there any way that someone that can't pay, could you pay like over time, or is there a way that they kind of help you out at all?
No, there's no way to help you out. They want all their money up front and at once. And, you know, the real sad part about it is that with all that's going on with us normally healthy people, there's handicapped people and the elderly who, I know one old man, Mr. Pugh, you know, on a fixed income, he's, you know, over 65. They make no provisions for the elderly and the handicapped. I've seen guys in wheelchairs, can't move their feet, can barely move their hand. They charge them the same fee, the same restrictions to get out there and sell chips and water during Mardi Gras. And I think that's just so inherently unfair. There's no accommodations made for them. Mississippi and a lot of areas, they're handicapped and they're elderly. In a lot of cases, don't have to pay for a license. They make provisions. They make accommodations. Here, we are very harsh when it comes to our disabled, our handicapped, and our elderly. We treat them the same as a normally healthy 20-year-old person.
Have you seen the sidewalks? I mean, you can't roll a wheelchair down some of those.
I've seen the Astro Hotel and other places block the handicap zone. And I went up to one guy and I said, you make it difficult for the handicap. And he almost wanted to fight me. I had to back away. We have no compassion, in my humble opinion, for the handicap. Because when you go in different areas, there is no handicap ramp. The handicap have to literally get in the street. So, you know, and I even considered trying to do a hot dog cart that would attach to the back of a wheelchair so these people could make ends meet or just a little something for Mardi Gras.
Right.
But going to the city and approaching them like that, again, they put you in a proverbial pipeline. And we look at our youth and we wonder why they're getting into this and why they're getting into that, Well, they don't have opportunity. They see all this money floating around. Everybody's getting something. We're not getting any. A parent could, you take a single mother, for example, and I'm not trying to be gender biased or anything, but just say a single mom who's taking care of one or two young boys, dad got killed, dad's in prison, whatever the dad is, and she wants to put him to work, but nobody will hire a 14-year-old. But she could put her own son to work on her own hot dog cart, and they could work together, they could bond, they could earn money together. He would learn responsibilities, learn finance, and learn how to run a business on a very small scale, help his mom. You know, a lot of these guys get into these crimes, you know, you find really to help mom, to help the house, trying to man up. But we're not allowing them to be men. We're not allowing people to take care of themselves. We're becoming so much like a communist country. and I look at the pedicab.
I wish. At least then we would we'd have safety nets.
Exactly. Government would take
people
care of you.
All littering the streets and, you know, and supported poverty.
Right. I can tell you.
Mandatory poverty, shall I say.
I agree. I remember these skateboarders being at the foot of Canal Street. These kids was just skateboarding, but I would see the police pounce on them and just be so mean-spirited to them and run them off and take two and three cars to do it. And I would see these same people with these 18-wheelers, these school buses, these tour buses and cars make all kind of illegal U-turns and left turns, almost killing people, running them over, and the police just sit there and watch them. And this has gone on for years, right there at that little turn at the foot of Canal Street. Mm-hmm. You got a 4-ton vehicle that could tear somebody, kill somebody with just one tap. But yeah, you're picking on skateboarders. I don't agree with some of these young kids do with their crazy self. They are just as crazy. You know what I'm saying? But they're young. And we've all done stupid things.
Mm-hmm.
But to use those kind of resources for minor, petty infractions speaks to the attitude of the city.
Well, one thing that I keep thinking is, like, the poor pay more, and, you know, because just thinking about, like, $9,000 franchise fees and the commercial clause and how those folks that are already established and have resources to be able to participate in some of these festivals that, you know, the government looks the other way for their, you know, ice cream truck or whatever. So it just makes me think about how people who don't have there's so many barriers. It's so much harder to get anywhere because of things like this. So we only have a few minutes left. So what can be done? Where are we at?
If there's anyone that want to help me in this fight, I would urge them to call me at or email me rather at monitorpete@yahoo.com. It's monitorpete @yahoo.com. And my cell phone number is 427-3257. Again, 427-3257. And my email is monitorpete@yahoo.com. MONOTORPETE. Three things I want to do. I'm working on putting a referendum together to have the voters of the city of New Orleans to actually vote on the ordinance to get it in place. If there's any paralegals, attorneys out there, street lawyers, I need assistance in crafting a lawsuit to bring before a federal court to make this a federal issue, and to lobby a city council person. And if you got to call them once and twice or three times a day to see when they're going to get started on allowing push carts into the CBD in Vucare. Trucks is in a little bit different category because a person that can usually afford $25,000, $50,000, $250,000 for a truck, it has substantially good credit or good backing. A push cart you could get for as little as $1,600 and turn into $25,000 at the end of the year. So we're in a totally different economic bracket. But if it pays the bills, it pays the bills. You know, you can get one for that price to meet health code. So if they can get in contact with me and work with me, they can meet me at Justice and Beyond. I'm usually at that meeting on Monday or Tuesday. And they usually have the meetings at Monday at 4:45 in the evening.
Where?
At North Claiborne and Conti Street, right across from the Auto Pound store. I got to apologize.
You call it a store?
I'm sorry, the Auto Pound.
The impound where they steal your car and then charge you to get it back, that place?
Yes.
It's in the Christian Unity Church.
Yes, right across from the Christian Unity Church.
Actually, I'm not even going to say a number because I always get addresses wrong. But yeah, it's in the Christian Unity Church at Conti and Clayport.
Yeah, right right upstairs. You can park downstairs. It's perfectly safe, so the people across the street won't get you. And I'm usually a Monday, and on Tuesday, it's at 12 noon. Okay. And that's usually a strategizing session.
And if someone wanted to come and get a tasty dog from you, where would they?
Right now, they can't get it because there's no place really viable that I could sell the type of dogs that I sell. I sell an all beef hot dog. The other areas, it would be a struggle to really put it there because I don't sell the low end dogs. I try to make healthy choices, even though I'm a meat eater. I do try to make healthy choices. And I like the Hebrew Nationals. I like the Soubrettes. I like the Viennas. And I like the Nathans because they're quality dogs. It's a healthier choice in terms of meats. Mm-hmm. So there's no place other than right there in the Central Business District or in a Vukare that I can sell them that would be profitable for me.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming in. Come on, people. Let's get Monitor Pete back to work.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Marie-Lou repose sous la neige. Et je me dis, et je me redis, de tous ces dessins d'enfants que neige put préserver la fraîcheur de l'inédit. De ma loue en bande dessinée, je parcourais les bulles arrondies. Lorsque je me vis exclu de ces jeux érotiques, j'en fis une maladie. Marie-Lou se sentait prise au piège, tout droit de reproduction interdit. Moi naïf, je pensais que me protégeait les droits du copyright.
This public service announcement is brought to you by Mid-City Neighborhood Organization and WTUL New Orleans. Mid-City Recovery Action Meetings take place on the first Monday of each month at 6:30 p.m. at Grace Episcopal Church, 3700 Canal Street. Their meetings are open to the public and all are invited to help rebuild Mid-City. More information is available on the Mid-City Neighborhood Organization website, mcno.org. Coming up, Counterspin, followed by Democracy Now! at 9. You're listening to WTUL New Orleans, 91.5 FM.